This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
The next speaker is Dr. Bilal Hamid. He has been with us the last 6 years. Have been a pretty amazing journey, right? So Bilal is currently the director of Transplant Hepatology Fellowship and associate chief of the Liver Clinic. And Bilal has, you know, also has a lot of passion about, you know, looking at quality measures in the practice of in an academic setting, and he's received award for some of the innovative ideas that he had. So Bilal has really done very well, and he also has been very busy running clinical trial. He's the PI for the NIH-funded acute liver failure study group, and he's also very actively involved in the NASH CRN. So that's what Bilal is going to talk about today, about the treatment landscape for NASH.
Thank you. Hello. Thank you, Francis. It's always, you know, I think we won't be talking about eradication of NASH, at least after NORA's eradication of hepatitis C. It's always get nervous when Tony is sitting as one of my mentor who taught me a lot and made me more interested in this field. So Marion just came and told me that you have to finish in 20 minutes. She's looking at her clock and she started the stopwatch. And it's hard to talk about so much things going on in fatty liver disease and NASH. So I'll try to make it brief and give a landscape. So there are so many things. And so we will going to talk about outline. Mainly before we talk about any clinical studies and how we have to read any of the trial, we need to know what NASH histology mean and how we have to look at the clinical trials and what are the designs of the trial. We need to look at what are the current therapies which are available and also what are the pathogenic pathways and potential targets. And then I'm going to talk about some of the four medications or five medications which I think are more interesting and more in the higher in the clinical phases. So first of all, when you talk about NASH, we have to divide into two categories. One is the NAFL, patients who only have steatosis. And those are the patients which we believe they're non-progressive disease and at this time, based on our understanding, that they don't need any treatment. But patients who have active inflammation, ballooning, and especially fibrosis are the one that we consider them for treatment. Therefore, still, the liver biopsy becomes the gold standard to understanding which group these patients are. The NASH histology, which the NASH CRN came in 2005, this is a sentinel paper, and that is actually look for more understanding for clinical trials and look at the NASH histology. I think Ryan Gill, who is standing, who is part of our NASH CRN pathology. But the important point to note that this NASH score has steatosis, ballooning, and inflammation. And the score goes from 0 to 8. And NASH, or definitive NASH, is if you have a score greater than 5. And the borderline NASH, what we call, is the score of 4. If you have a score less than 3, that person does not have NASH. And when you look at the clinical trials, they have different designs and different categories they use at how we define the primary outcomes. The most important thing on a liver biopsy is liver fibrosis. This is an amazing study by Laidball Angolo, and they had these patients, about 619 patients, followed for about 13 years. And they found out that the single more important thing in the liver biopsy is the fibrosis. And patients who had fibrosis, they did worse than patients who did not have fibrosis. And these are the patients who actually don't even have their patients in this group that have just NAS without having NASH. So there's no active inflammation. But if they had fibrosis on the initial biopsy, they actually did not do that well. So therefore, any of the clinical trials, we have to look at it. We have to see that how many patients with fibrosis were included in the clinical trial and what was the response of that medication on the fibrosis. When we look at the clinical trials, the two most important definitions that we have to look at it, the SUM trials look at resolution of the NASH. So the resolution of NASH is that if someone has a NASH score of greater than 4 or 5, that at the end of the clinical trial, the NASH score is less than 3, with no worsening fibrosis. The second, which is mostly used by our NASH CRN, is improvement of NASH score of 2 or more points with no worsening fibrosis. And that improvement has to have in more than one category. So you can have improvement in steatosis, ballooning, or improvement in inflammation. So these are the two more important definitions that been used. And when I show the clinical trials, you will gonna get an idea that what it means and how many people are able to achieve that primary outcome. But we need more different criteria or design endpoint. So latest studies are focusing on this MR spectrography or MRI, which is also fat fraction. So a couple of studies we are doing is using as the initial and the primary endpoint. And these are pretty interesting. They can look at the fibrosis and they look at the fat and all over the liver, and also can help us an idea that where the fat is, and it does not get affected by blood vessels or anything. But it's still in the early phase. Some of the trials just use ALT improvement as the primary outcome. We're also doing trials in patients with cirrhosis. And there is a whole conference that happened that when you're doing a trial in cirrhosis, what would be the primary outcome? And then there is a lot of different discussion, but the most important thing is whether you can improve their portal pressure. And therefore, most of these trials we do, they have a baseline pressure check measurement, and we do it at a periodic interval. At the same time, when you enroll anyone with cirrhosis, what will be their outcome? Their debt, their decompensation, what the MELD score. So these are the endpoints that we're still working. But at this time, we don't know what will be the best outcome for any of the NASH study. And therefore, we're still in the very early phase. And the problem is that unlike hepatitis C or other thing, we don't have an SVR we can say that you achieved this and you can. Even the resolution of NASH, we don't know what will be the long outcome of that importance of this. So we need to better understand these clinical outcomes. So what do we have available right now? What we can give to our patient? So there are three main things. What is the lifestyle modification, vitamin E, and pioglitazone. When you look at the lifestyle modification, this is an important study which was, they divided patients into two categories. One is just the regular control arm, and they met with a dietitian, they told them to lose weight, which most of us do that. But we know that most of our patients are unable to lose weight. In this, the second arm was they actually had met with a dietitian on a regular basis. They have to have 1,000 to 1,500 calories per day. They have a pedometer. They have to walk 10,000 steps per day. What they found out that average there was 9.3% weight loss in the lifestyle group. And also, when you lost about 7% of your weight, you did have improvement in your NAS activity score. There's more and more data that if you lose 5% of your body weight, you improve steatosis. If you lose 7% of your weight, you started having improvement in inflammation and NAS score, and 9 to 10% when you started having improvement in the fibrosis. So the pivotal paper from NASH CRN, which Dr. Bass was one of the authors, and from our NASH CRN, the primary outcome in this PIVENS trial was decrease in the NAS score by 2 points with greater than 1 point decrease in ballooning and no worsening of fibrosis. And the three-arm study, vitamin E, placebo, and pioglitazone. So this was the reason we're recommending vitamin E. It achieved the primary outcome in 43% in vitamin E group. Placebo has 19%, and the pioglitazone arm has 34%. The problem was that when you look at the primary outcome, there has to have one decrease of 1 point in ballooning. But when we look back, when the central pathologists look at the studies, that there were more patients in the pioglitazone arm who did not have ballooning on the initial biopsy. So they cannot reach the clinical outcome. The other definition is resolution of NASH. So if you look at the resolution of NASH, 47% patient in pioglitazone arm and 36% in vitamin E had resolution of NASH. So pioglitazone did work, but I will talk about what are the issues with both of these medications. So summary of the current recommendation in NASH. So if you have intervention and improvement of NASH are weight loss, 5 to 10%, vitamin E, 800 IUs per day, or pioglitazone. There are other studies using pioglitazone 45 milligram actually shows that it can improve fibrosis. Interventions that can lead to resolution of NASH, again, weight loss 5 to 10%, vitamin E, and pioglitazone. An intervention that can improve the fibrosis is weight loss and pioglitazone, but there's no long-term data on these interventions and clinical outcomes. But there are a lot of limitations. The weight loss, as we know, is very difficult to induce and even more difficult to maintain. The vitamin E can increase the risk of bleeding and in a dose-dependent manner that can be starting at about 400. We have patients who are on vitamin E for 10 years now, and we don't know what will be the long-term outcome, how long to continue. We don't have any long-term data on it. There is a paper, a selenium trial, which shows that in older men, vitamin E increased the risk of prostate cancer. Vitamin E also can increase the risk of hemorrhagic stroke. The pioglitazone, the main problem is weight gain. There are different studies. In our Piven's trial, the average weight gain was about 5 kilograms and also increased the risk of bone fractures. It's a black box warning for bladder cancer or cardiovascular disease, mainly heart failure. So we need more treatment. As we know, there is no FDA-approved medication for NASH. There are more clinical trials. There are more medications coming in than our scandal for our presidential campaign every day. So you can imagine that how many medications are out there now. So, but before we go, this was, it's a complicated, so, but Nora and I had this paper, it's article published in Clinics in Liver Disease, and we actually tried to make this diagram to get an understanding of what, but it gets more complicated when we are making. We have to take something out. But the bottom line is that there's not only in the liver. There are a lot of things going in the intestine. This affects our lichen. There are other hormones that release from the intestine. The adipose tissue where start the peripheral insulin resistance. So the medications that we are working with, working in a lot of different pathways. But to simplify how we look into these agents and how the pathogenesis work, this was a much simpler way to understand. So when you have genetics, microbiome, and behavior, everything can lead to insulin resistance. So one class of medication that we are working with is our insulin resistance that improve insulin sensitivity. Then it can cause steatosis, increased free fatty acid, and then ultimately the inflammatory pathway get activated. And that can cause stellate cell activation, apoptosis, and cell death. So the other classes are inflammatory agents, the apoptosis, and ultimately, if we can improve the fibrosis or prevent the fibrosis to progress. To just give you a taste, the first class is FXR agonist, and it can cause carbohydrate improvement in carbohydrate, lipid metabolism improvement, and insulin sensitivity. And the main medication which is available right now in the clinical trial is obeticholic acid. You may have heard about the primary biliary cholangitis, which is recently approved. It's an FXR agonist, which we're going to talk about. Insulin sensitizers, the two main is the PPAR agonist and GLP-1. And elafibranor, which is GFT-505, and liraglutide are the two main medication in this category right now. The modulators of lipogenesis, the LXR inhibitor, the Altipres is in the phase 2 trial. Both ACC and ASK inhibitors are in the phase 2 clinical trials. Anti-inflammatory and anti-apoptosis are the caspase inhibitors, which is amikacin and chemokine receptor. And the last one are the antifibrotic. So two main antifibrotic which are in the phase 2 clinical trial are the monoclonal antibody for this LOX2 inhibitor, which is a inhibit the extracellular matrix and prevent them from fibrosis. And there's a Gilead medication called simtuzumab, and we are evaluating it in both cirrhosis with NASH and advanced fibrosis in NASH. And the collectin 3 inhibitor is also in the phase 2 clinical trial. So it's a race to the finish line. Since there is no FDA-approved medication, the companies are very eager to get first FDA-approved medication for NASH. And there is one, I'll give you an idea about what happened with the press release of some of these medication and how the stock prices changes for a company. So the four medication I wanted to give you an idea about are the first is obeticholic acid, the GFT-5 for 5, cenicero-voric, which is CVC, and the simtuzumab. So as we talked about, this FXR is a very complicated system, but obeticholic acid is a synthetic bile acid for chenodeoxycholic acid. It has 100 times more affinity for FXR activity, and when you increase the FXR activity, it activates fatty acid synthesis, it shuts down the bile acid, and it also have receptors in the intestine, and that's where it mediates the insulin sensitivity by activation of TGR5 activation. And therefore, for all these reasons, it has also had a role for primary biliary cholangitis because of their shutting down the bile acid synthesis. So our group paper from NASH CRN was published this year. It's an FXR receptor ligand for non-cirrhotic, non-alcoholic hepatitis, which is the Flint trial. So our primary endpoint was, again, improvement in NAS score by greater than 2 points and no worsening of fibrosis. So if we compare the obeticholic acid 25 milligram versus placebo, 46% patient in obeticholic arm had achieved the primary outcome, meaning they have an improvement of NAS score of greater than 2 with no worsening fibrosis as compared to placebo, which is 21%. The duration of the trial was 72 weeks. And the trial was terminated early, so the last 64 patients did not have a liver biopsy because we reached the predetermined the endpoint. Not only the it improves the primary outcome, but across the group, the steatosis, inflammation, and ballooning was improved in patients who were on the obeticholic acid 25 milligram arm. It has improvement in fibrosis. But if you look at the NASH resolution, which I had a definition before, was achieved in 22% patient with OCA versus 13% in patient with placebo. It had a very good drop in ALT, GGT, and body weight. So interestingly, this was surprising for most of us that actually patients on obeticholic acid lost about 2.3 kilogram weight. But the there was slight increase in alkaline phosphatase, which we cannot explain what was the reason. But the things we were worried about is that patient on obeticholic acid has increase in total cholesterol, also had decrease of HDL and increase of LDL. So definitely a medication we're using for NASH, with we have to understand what the other metabolic risk factors. So that was one of the concern for the study. Not only that, if you look at the lipid changes on obeticholic acid in the primary biliary cholangitis trial, they also had, it's a little bit complicated graph, but in short, the HDL also decreased in patients with PBC, and there was a slight increase in LDL. But when they went to the open phase, that difference went away. But we have to keep a close watch on it. What is meaning of it and whether it's clinically significant, we don't know. But we have to realize it and understand a little bit better in our phase 3 clinical trial. The major problem with obeticholic acid was severe pruritus. So 23% patient in obeticholic arm versus 6% in placebo had pruritus. So the summary for the Flint is that it does improve the histological features of NASH, including fibrosis. But obeticholic acid was associated with pruritus. It does cause increase in total and LDL cholesterol and decrease in the HDL cholesterol, which we need to understand a little bit better. So there is an ongoing phase 3 clinical trial called REGENERATE, which is comparing about two dosages of obeticholic acid, 10 milligram and 25 milligram versus placebo. And the plan is to enroll about 2,000 patients for 18 months with 4-year further follow-up. So these kind of the study that we can see whether there was an improvement in fibrosis and what to look out for the cholesterol. So the other interesting agent was 12 PPAR alpha and delta agonist GFT-505, also called elafibranor. So it does do a lot of different functions, but it does inhibit this SR, which is sterol receptor. And when it stop it, it shut down the fatty acid synthesis and activate beta oxidation. And the alpha component have also improved the insulin sensitivity peripherally. So it was very promising that it will going to improve the hemoglobin A1C and cholesterol because of its effect. So how did they design the study? That they took 270 patients with a biopsy-proven NASH, and there were three arms, the placebo, 120 milligram arm, and 80 milligram. So the study endpoint was interesting that they wanted to look at resolution of NASH, but their fibrosis definition that it has to have improvement in fibrosis and there's no progression of fibrosis to stage 3 or stage 4. The problem is that it was a 52-week study and majority of half of their patients have either no fibrosis or F1 fibrosis. It was not long enough to get that. So after the study was done, they have this modified endpoint. So what they changed the endpoint to the normal resolution of NASH with no worsening fibrosis. 80 milligram of GFT did not have any benefit, but I'm just showing the comparison between placebo and 120. So protocol-defined outcome, which was resolution of NASH and no worsening of fibrosis to stage 3 or 4, it was not any statistical significant. So 21% patient in 120 milligram arm and 17% in placebo arm. What about the modified definition? So that's where you started looking at the change. So 19% of patient versus 12%. And when they look at the more strict criteria, the NAS score, interestingly, it was one of the big multi-center studies, and a lot of patients got into the trial with a NAS score of about 3. And once they look at the NAS score of greater than 4, it starts showing the benefit. So it was 19% versus 9%. So this drug, the elafibranor, also resolved NASH without worsening in higher proportion. It improved the lipid parameters and glycemic control. I did not show that data. But it also had 7 patients in the 120 milligram had worsening of the renal function, which is very surprising, and we don't know what the reason for it. This is the second medication which is in the phase 3 clinical trial. So there are only 2 medications, obeticholic acid and GFT-505, and this trial name is Resolve IT, and it also wants to enroll greater than 2,000 patients, and the focus of both clinical trials is to get patients more in F2 and F3 fibrosis, which needs more urgent treatment or medication. The third study, it's going to be late-breaking abstract for AASLD this year. It's efficacy and safety of CVC or cenicervoric for non-alcoholic steatohepatitis with liver fibrosis. So they took the patient with NASH stage 1 to 3 fibrosis. They had 150 milligram daily placebo arm, and their endpoint is 2-point improvement in NAS without worsening fibrosis, and they want to follow this for 2 years. So in September, they released as a press release their 1-year data. At 1-year mark, they did not reach any significant primary endpoint, so 2-point improvement in NAS, no worsening fibrosis, were not clinically significant. However, the resolution of NASH, no worsening, no significant. But this improvement in fibrosis of greater than 1 stage was seen in 20% of patients with CVC arm versus placebo. So when they did this press release in September, their stock was at $4. And it went up to $40. Which is 720% increase, and the next week or same week, Allergan bought this company for $1.7 billion. So this is how the race is going on for NASH, because the companies want to be the first one to be FDA. But we are a long way from that right now. So last few slides about this very interesting simtuzumab, which is anti-LOX2, and the Gilead Pharmaceutical are doing two different trials with this medication. It's NASH cirrhosis patient, 259, and it's an actually IV infusion. They get it every 2 weeks. So it's 700 milligram, 200 in placebo. It's already enrolled. We have a lot of patients on this trial. And the endpoint was pressure gradient and event-free survival, which is liver transplant, MELD of greater than 15, and decompensation. And they have this open-label phase for 240 weeks. They also had the similar design, but it's a sub-Q form, which they want NASH with stage 3 fibrosis. Their endpoint is increased change in the liver biopsy, which is morphometric changes, and event-free survival. Again, we have to see what the results will be, but this is the first antifibrotic agent, and their interest is whether they can reverse the fibrosis and improvement in portal hypertension. This medication also just got finished with primary sclerosing cholangitis, so we just finished that clinical trial. We're waiting the results of it. Now, the future, we think, is the combination medication. So this is the trial we just finished with Gilead. They wanted 70 patients, but they have this ASK1 inhibitor, and they're using the anti-inflammatory with antifibrotic agent. So it's a newer concept. They have like 5-arm, but it's a proof of concept kind of a thing. They did release a press release last week about it, and it shows some promising results. So in summary, there are no FDA-approved medications for NASH right now. Vitamin E is still the main treatment for biopsy-proven NASH. The resolution of NASH and improvement in fibrosis is possible. There are very several exciting molecules in clinical development for NASH and hepatic fibrosis, but we need to better define the primary outcomes, predictors of response, and duration of studies. And combination therapies are on the horizon. In conclusion, in the future, a more personalized treatment approach can be envisioned based on specific metabolic and liver disease profile. Combination of drugs working in complementary or synergistic way are likely to be the future of effective NASH therapy. I would say that still we are about 4 or 5 years away from any of the FDA-approved medication. So as you know that we do have this big NIH-funded NASH CRN. We're always doing more, so we had enrolled, finished a lot of clinical trial, but right now at UCSF, we have the Regenerate Resolve. We have the GS095976. We just started enrolling, and this new medication, Emrysakin, also in the phase 2 trial. Again, I would like to thank all of my mentors, Dr. Bass, Dr. Thoreau, Francis Yao, and Marion Peters, Dr. Brandman, who is holding the fort behind us, who is my colleague in fatty liver disease, Monica, who does a lot of fatty liver and PCOS, Rohit Lomba, who is also my mentor at UCSD and helped with some of the study designs and a big name in NASH and also helped with some of the slides, and my coordinators, and some of those names are because Jen Lyon shared a lot of coordinators because they're so awesome. So Rachel, Claudia, Alina, and Yara, and thank you. And please make sure that you change the clock on Sunday, and when you go out for vote, don't bring countries back 50 years back, okay? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, yes, Dan.
You can repeat the question.
Okay. So the question is, what the effect of bariatric surgery? So there is a lot of data that the bariatric surgery, but if you look at the ASLD guideline, they're not recommended as the first line or second line treatment. So, you know, the weight loss data we have available, and that's again that there are patients when they got the bariatric surgery, the initial data that majority, half of them had resolution of NASH and improvement in fibrosis. So that is one of the big things. But at the same time, there's another study that came out that after 3 years when they did repeat biopsy, the fibrosis did not have any significant improvement. So that becomes muddy the water, but we do recommend patients who have significant metabolic risk factors, are not able to lose weight, and that if they can consider the weight loss surgery, it will also a good option. But most of the patients, when you talk to them, they are not interested in it.
Charlie, last question.
You know, we have our Pete's colleague, Emily, would be like, we are seeing it across every age group, and it's becoming like youngest patient I have seen from Phil is like 17-year-old with cirrhosis of the liver. And I think we are seeing this epidemic, and what we started knowing, the more questions are actually arising. There's a lean BMI, the lean group with fatty liver. What are the genetic factors? What are the environmental factors? So we're still at the tip of the iceberg. And therefore, I think we are working more with these medications. But there are a lot of things. And if you look at the placebo versus any of the medication, the response rate is 40%. So we are nowhere near, and we need to learn more about it. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. So thank you, Bilal. Very interesting talk.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.